All right, diving in today, folks, and we are tackling a case that really I think is important in reviewing Vioxx product liability litigation. And for anyone out there really grappling with mass torts and MDLs, this one you really can't skip it. I mean, it highlights some really interesting dynamics between you know, the state and federal courts.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Vioxx was a legal earthquake. You're talking Merck, a pharma giant pulling a major pain medication back in 2004. And the reason serious heart risks, boom, over 50,000 lawsuits. I mean, it's a textbook case, really, of how product safety issues can explode into this massive legal battle.
Exactly. And what we're zeroing in on today is that fascinating legal back and forth that happened when you had a nationwide settlement, nice and neat, through the federal MDL. But then, boom, a state-level class action pops up right there in Missouri.
Yeah.
And they're after economic damages. So the question we're wrestling with today is, you know, how much power do federal courts have? Can they actually limit what happens in state lawsuits to protect those big MDL settlements they work so hard for? You know, we're pulling our insights from legal briefs, case stuff, even some notes from a kind of hypothetical LexCo podcast, you know, aimed at law students. So very much thinking with their legal caps on here.
Perfect. Let's rewind a bit, set the stage. So, 1999, FDA gives Vioxx the thumbs up. It was for pain, various conditions, and it, I mean, it takes off like a rocket. Millions are using it. Then 2004 rolls around, and we've got the AP proof trial. Uh-oh, red flags. Turns out there's a significant, let's say, increase in heart attack and stroke risks. And so, Merck pulls Vioxx. I mean, a game changer.
And, yeah, I mean, no surprise, that withdrawal is like a starting pistol for a wave of lawsuits. And we're not just talking federal court. This hits state courts, too. I mean, the claims, you name it. Product liability right, the drugs causing harm, tortious conduct, that whole, you know, wrongful behavior causing harm, misrepresenting the safety, even consumer fraud. I mean, the whole legal playbook was thrown at Merck.
Yeah, exactly. And when you have that tidal wave of lawsuits, especially in federal courts, well, the system's got a tool. The Judicial Panel on Multidistrict Litigation, they step in, consolidate everything into a single MDL. And that's exactly what happened in 05, MDL 1657 in Louisiana. Judge Eldon Fallon was at the helm. I mean, this consolidation for mass torts, it's crucial. Imagine, just imagine trying to wrangle discovery, you know, gathering evidence across, take like thousands of separate lawsuits, it'd be pure chaos. So the MDL centralizes it. Documents, in this case, millions of them, depositions, you know, sworn testimonies.
They even use bellwether trials.
Sorry, right?
Now, for folks who aren't, you know, fluent in legalese, what are those? Just quick reminder.
Yeah, sure. So bellwether trials, you can think of them as like test cases, right? So a few representative cases, they actually go through a full-blown trial, and it gives both sides a chance to see how a jury might react to the evidence, the arguments, the whole nine yards.
Right, right. So it's sort of a barometer, like a temperature check almost.
Exactly. And with Vioxx, there were six of these bellwether trials, and they, you know, they offer a lot of insight, show you the strengths, the weaknesses of each side's case, and oftentimes they really nudge parties towards a settlement. And that's what we see happening in 2007, a global settlement, a big one, $4.85 billion. And that was to resolve most of those personal injury claims tied to Vioxx. Now, a key piece here, anyone taking part had to release, I mean, all Vioxx-related claims against Merck. No more lawsuits. So you take the money, that's it, you're done.
It sounds pretty final, right? Tie it all up in a nice, neat bow.
Mm.
But there's always a twist, isn't there? Not everyone was covered under that.
You're right. There's more to the story. There was another settlement, this one for consumer class actions. These were folks who bought Vioxx, maybe didn't have a personal injury claim, maybe they didn't get sent, but they were looking at economic losses, like the money they spent on the drug, medical monitoring costs, that kind of thing. And this is where our Missouri story really kicks off.
Ah, Missouri. All right, so Mary Plubel and Ted Ivey, they file a class action in Missouri State Court. Now, this is important. Their suit specifically left out anyone claiming a personal injury from Vioxx. Their goal, purely economic damages under Missouri consumer protection law. Essentially, they're saying, hey, we were tricked into buying this drug. We want our money back. Sick or not, we were wronged. It sounds like a separate issue, you know? Why would Merck even care about this?
Well, Merck's concern was double recovery. Their argument boiled down to this. Those economic damages sought in Missouri, things like the cost of the Vioxx prescriptions, well, those could include prescriptions from people who'd already settled personal injury claims in the federal MDL. So Merck, in their view, could end up paying twice for the same problem. Once through the MDL settlement for the harm, And again, in Missouri, for the cost of the drug for some of those same people.
Okay, so that's where the feds, the MDL court, they felt they needed to step in, right? But hold on. How does a federal court even have the power to meddle with a case happening in a separate state court system? It's like two different universes, right?
Right. And this is where the legal intricacies get really interesting. The MDL court, they had two main tools in their belt. First one, the All Writs Act. This gives federal courts broad authority to issue orders that are necessary or appropriate to protect their jurisdiction. It's like, you know, if the federal court's trying to manage this huge, complex web of litigation, right, get to a resolution, and something outside their direct control pops up, like this Missouri case, threatening that whole process. The All Writs Act, it's like their shield, allows them to step in, take action, and protect their ability to do their job. In this case, the worry was, well, the Missouri case could totally derail the MDL court's ability to finalize the settlement and enforce it.
Okay, makes sense. So that's tool number one, right? Like a jurisdictional shield. What's the second one?
All right, the second one. This gets a little tricky. It's an exception to the Anti-Injunction Act. Now, the Anti-Injunction Act, generally, it's like a big, bold, stay-in-your-lane sign to federal courts. They can't just block state court proceedings. Federalism, right? States' rights, gotta respect that. But there are exceptions, little loopholes. And the one we're looking at here is the in aid of jurisdiction exception. It allows a federal court, in specific cases, to issue an injunction. Think of it as like a legal cease and desist order against a state court case. If that case is, you know, stepping on the federal court's toes, interfering with their jurisdiction. So while it's rare for federal courts to dictate to state courts, this exception, it's like a narrow path they can take in certain situations.
It really highlights that tension, right? That balance of power between state and federal courts. It's not an everyday occurrence.
You're absolutely right. It's a delicate dance. And to be clear, the MDL court in Vioxx, they weren't just inventing this power out of thin air. They had precedent, a case from the Third Circuit, In Re Diet Drugs. Similar story, MDL court issues an injunction to protect its settlement from being undermined by a state court case. So the Vioxx court, they had a legal foundation to stand on.
Got it. So the MDL court decides, all right, we're issuing an injunction against those Missouri plaintiffs, but it wasn't a total shutdown, right? They didn't just say, stop, drop everything, go home.
You're right. The injunction was strategic, very targeted. They didn't shut down the Missouri case completely. Instead, they got specific. They said, Missouri plaintiffs, you can't use evidence that's directly linked to those settled personal injury claims in the MDL. For example, they couldn't use evidence about prescriptions that were paid for by people who'd already signed releases in the MDL settlement. It's like they drew a line in the sand. The Missouri case, it could continue, but they couldn't rehash or try to benefit from the evidence and the resolution that had already happened in the federal MDL.
Interesting. So the case could go on, but with some serious limits on the evidence they could use. So what was the logic, the legal thinking behind this, you know, this more tailored approach?
The main goal was to protect what the court called the peace that Merck had achieved with that global settlement. Judge Fallon, the court, they recognized that if state courts could just, you know, reopen parts of claims already settled in the MDL, well, that would create a massive risk for Merck. They could be on the hook for the same liability multiple times over. And beyond this specific case, the court said, look, allowing state courts to just undo MDL settlements, it would send shockwaves through future resolutions and other complex cases. I mean, why would any defendant agree to a massive settlement if they knew state courts could just come in and pick it apart? So it's all about balance, protecting the settlement, respecting federalism, and the independence of those state courts.
It makes a lot of sense. They weren't trying to flex their muscles just because they could, right? It was about protecting the outcome of this massive, complex legal process that they'd poured so much into. Huh. Now, earlier, we mentioned bellwether trials, the test cases. There are a few other legal terms that pop up in these giant, complicated cases. Can you break down, you know, Lone Pine orders real quick? How do they fit into all of this?
Yeah, for sure. Lone Pine orders, these are pre-trial orders, and courts will use them sometimes in, you know, complex litigation, especially with mass torts, lots of plaintiffs, potentially varying degrees of connection to the harm. So these orders, they basically say, plaintiffs, early on, you got to show me the goods. Show me some initial evidence that links the defendant's product or actions to the injury you're claiming. It's a way for courts to manage these sprawling cases, potentially weed out weaker claims, and just streamline the whole thing. Now, Lone Pine orders weren't a major player in the Vioxx case, at least as it relates to the Missouri injunction, but it's definitely a tool MDL courts can use to keep things manageable.
Right, so we've got Lone Pine orders to sort of keep those initial claims in check. We've talked about bellwether trials, the test cases that can steer settlement talks. Now, back to the All Writs Act for a sec. It feels like, in Vioxx, that's really the bedrock, the legal foundation that allows the MDL court to manage this whole beast of a litigation, right, from start to finish.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not just about the injunction in the Missouri case. It's about the court's inherent power, to do what needs to be done to ensure that all the claims before them are resolved in an orderly way, effectively. And that includes, big time, safeguarding those settlements that they've fought so hard to achieve.
Makes sense. So let's dig a little deeper into this native jurisdiction exception. It's not just any impact on the MDL that gives a federal court the green light to jump in, right? There has to be a real, genuine threat to the core purpose of the MDL.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. The Vioxx case didn't, reinvent this exception. What it did was give us a very clear, practical example of how this principle can be applied in a specific situation in a tailored way. The key question, and the court really wrestled with this, was whether the Missouri action would functionally undermine the finality and the effectiveness of the MDL settlement. It wasn't enough that it might cause some complications or overlap. It had to be a real significant danger to the settlement itself. And if the Missouri case could essentially let plaintiffs who were part of that MDL settlement, if it let them come back for more indirectly for the same issues, well, that would totally undermine the purpose, the value of that federal settlement.
And how does that differ from some of the other, the more maybe common exceptions to the Anti-Injunction Act? I mean, there are others, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You've got the relitigation exception, which is a big one. That's where a federal court can step in and stop a state court case to protect its own judgments, the ones it's already made.
Yeah.
And then there's the express federal law exception, where you have a specific federal law that basically says, hey, federal court, you can issue an injunction against a state court case in this specific situation. The Vioxx situation, it didn't really fit neatly into either of those boxes. The MDL court, they weren't directly defending a prior judgment on the specific merits of the claims the Missouri plaintiffs were making. And there wasn't a federal law that explicitly said, MDL courts, you can enjoin state court cases in this exact situation. So they had to go with the innative jurisdiction exception, the one that's all about protecting the MDL process, the settlement, and ensuring its finality. That was the right tool for the job.
So it's like they found a way to fit the puzzle piece, right? They found the right legal tool for this very unique situation. And this case really shows us that balancing act, right? The tightrope walk of MDL practice. You're aiming for efficiency. You want to resolve things on a massive scale, but you also have to respect the states, their courts, the rights of individual plaintiffs to pursue their claims. I mean, it's a tough job.
Absolutely. And the Vioxx Act's litigation, it offers some lessons in how courts can get creative with these complex settlements, using escrow funds, to handle potential future claims, disputes that might pop up. And like we talked about, the very specific way they designed that injunction in the Missouri case, it shows a preference for targeted interventions, not just sweeping bans on state court actions. So for anyone, really digging into this area of law, the big takeaway from Vioxx is that it's a real-world example of how courts try to navigate this mega litigation world, but do so while respecting the foundation of our legal system, federalism.
So for our listeners, especially those law students out there trying to wrap their heads around all this, what are some of the big questions, the thought-provoking issues that Vioxx raises? And why is it still a relevant case? Why are we still talking about it today?
Here's a hypothetical. Imagine if the Missouri plaintiffs, they were super meticulous and they completely verifiably excluded any prescriptions tied to people who were already part of that MDL settlement. Could the MDL court still justify their injunction? It really makes you think, where's the line? When does protecting a federal settlement step on the toes of those state law claims?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It makes you think. And it brings up a broader concern. Does a ruling like this give them too much power, too much influence over state court systems? It's a fundamental question, right? Of the balance of power in our legal system and whether federal courts might be overreaching. I mean, it's a big question.
Absolutely. And if you look at where we are now, legally speaking, those principles and strategies we see in Vioxx, they're still relevant. The opioid litigation, for example, MDLs, they're playing a huge role trying to resolve thousands upon thousands of claims against those pharmaceutical companies. And I think the arguments, the judicial approaches that were hammered out in cases like Vioxx, They're shaping how these newer MDLs are being handled. And then there's the tactic those Missouri plaintiffs used in Vioxx, you know, focusing on economic damages instead of personal injury. It's almost like a preview of what we're seeing more and more today, these non-personal injury claims, like cities and counties suing pharmaceutical companies for the costs associated with the opioid crisis, public health issues. So Vioxx, it gives us a framework, a lens to understand these legal battles that are happening right now.
It's fascinating, right, how these precedents, they ripple outward. How cases from the past can shape the way we handle these massive legal challenges today. So we're wrapping up our deep dive into INRI Vioxx. What are those key takeaways our listeners should walk away with?
The big one, the core idea, is that federal MDL courts, they have the power to step in, to intervene in a state court case if that case is jeopardizing the integrity and finality of the settlements they've worked so hard to achieve, especially when there's a clear risk of what they call duplicative recovery. Now, this power, it's not a small thing, but it's generally used in a very specific, targeted way. We see that in the Vioxx case with those very specific limits placed on the Missouri lawsuit. And the need for finality in these, you know, these huge settlements, it's crucial. It's what incentivizes defendants to come to the table, to agree to resolve a massive number of claims. Without that guarantee, you know, without that assurance that an MDL settlement means something, means closure, the whole MDL process, it could fall apart. It wouldn't work.
And on that note, here's a final thought to chew on. In Vioxx, it shows us that mass tort litigation, it's not just about the science or the damages or the numbers. It's a complex game, a strategic game played out on a legal chessboard. And what happens at the federal level, the maneuvering, the decisions made, they have huge implications for what happens in state courts. Ultimately, those federal-level decisions can determine how tens of thousands of claims are resolved. And it forces us to confront that tension, the push and pull between efficiency, the need to resolve these huge legal challenges quickly and fairly, and the bedrock of our legal system, federalism. It's a complicated dance, and one that continues to shape the legal landscape we see today.
Well said.
And that's our deep dive.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Until next time.